Dan Levitard, if we're really being honest about it, it's just a giant piece of shit.
To the Big Suey.
Bald Eagles.
A podcast exclusive that none of our bosses asked for.
More sports.
More work. Less pay.
I haven't stopped talking in a month. I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Just when you thought the show couldn't be more diluted. Bam.
Last time I listened to this show.
I haven't listened for years.
Now here's the marching band to nowhere.
Am I missing something? What am I missing?
The end of the story.
Fat face.
Chris Fallick.
It's Felica. You made him a penis.
And the habitual liar.
I didn't ask for any of it.
You asked for all of it.
The Big Suey.
I'm Chris Cody, BSPN.
So one of the things that would probably make an appearance in a hypothetical rant if the Miami Heat were to indeed win this series against the Boston Celtics and win the title against the Lakers is absolutely me shouting Mike Ryan wanted the Heat to boycott and forfeit game one over voter registration. And I say that with a smile on my face, even though I probably shouldn't, Stugatz, because one of the things that I noticed was happening yesterday, and I thought the conversation before the bubble, when there weren't games being played and basketball players were afraid that them going and playing games would deter from us looking at what was happening outside their bubble. What you had happen yesterday with Breonna Taylor was hugely heartbreaking for the Black community to see something that felt like the only bullets that bring charges are the ones that endanger white people. People were only, a police officer was only charged for the bullets that missed Breonna Taylor, and according to Breonna Taylor's attorney, hit the apartment with the white people in it. No police officer was charged for the bullets that hit the neighbors with the black people in it. And the symbolism of that in this time, and I don't know what happened there. I know people will climb into your mentions real fast and say, boyfriend's a criminal, everything else, and just real fast they get there. I don't know what happened there, and you don't know what happened there, but I know why black people are suspicious of what happened there, and I've got enough evidence about police officers covering stuff like that up in even just this case to make me hugely skeptical about where the truth is in an unjust system where the police are hardly ever charged for these kinds of crimes. One of the things that we were talking about is people can chew on multiple things at the same time. Don't underestimate people. They can do both. But Breonna Taylor's verdict might have felt different yesterday if not for all the distractions we have around us trying to get back to normal, sports being one of them. And many of us felt very good here last night watching. This is the juxtaposition that's crazy, Stugatz. There is nothing in sports better, nothing than the surprise, nothing. The surprise team is the best thing that you get in sports. It's better than game sevens, better than anything. The underdog surprise. When you did not expect something from your team, you will absolutely fall in love with the surprise. And God knows we need some bleeping feel good.
Right.
And it's just something that feels good. And so these two things align in a way that has reporters breaking down on air when talking about the heartbreak of what I'm saying, which is black people feel that a horrible injustice was allowed to take place because a system that disproportionately punishes black people and is contaminated by protecting police officers who sometimes do not tell the truth when it comes to covering up their crimes seems to again have killed a black person who, whatever you believe here, many people believe was sleeping in her home, minding her own business when she died. And many of the guys in that bubble were requesting, were asking for justice, specifically arrest the police officers. Tobias Harris did a press conference where it's all he said. Arrest the police officers who killed Breonna Taylor. And what you see yesterday, and again, if you're not familiar with the details on this, these are the reported details. Don't take it up with me because I don't know what happened there and you do not know what happened there. But the reported details seen through the prism of the basketball players in this bubble make it feel like the charges, two police officers, no charges, one police officer, a 5-year max sentence for wanton endangerment. The bullets that missed Breonna Taylor are the ones that are being punished. The bullets, according to her lawyer, that endangered the white people who were her neighbors are the ones that are being punished. If I put that in front of you, there was a whole lot of heartbreak in that bubble, and there were reports out of the bubble that while guys talked about the idea of sitting out games, they know, again, talked about the idea of sitting because this is so heartbreaking. They continued to play on and offer us the medicine of distraction that I'm not sure we deserve given how contaminated the United States is right now.
There was heartbreak inside the bubble. There was heartbreak outside of the bubble as well. It was terrible. It was terrible to hear how that verdict came out yesterday. Malika Andrews was one of those reporters who broke down on air with Scott Van Pelt, and she did very eloquent, did a very nice job explaining just how impactful this news has been on the players inside that bubble.
She's
and how
25.
It's her.
She was talking to our producer. Breonna Taylor's 26, and Malika is 25, and just it hit a little close to home, the idea that you could be sleeping in your home. And the idea, okay, let's eliminate what you think you know about the facts, whichever side of this you're on. The idea that black people look at that and see, wait a minute, the police can come into my home and kill me while I'm sleeping, and then something that looks like a cover-up can take place, and there will be no, never mind conviction, there will be very few charges. Like, if you're looking at that through a black prism where you're already distrustful, you've been betrayed by this country in a number of ways, this is the climate we're in, and that's what the charges are when police are just hardly ever charged on this stuff, Stugat.
But, Dan, I think the players deciding to play these games and stay in the bubble and play this thing all the way through has been a great decision from this standpoint. There was a lot of feel-good, and last night I went to experience some of that feel-good with the post-game, listening to Heat players talk and stuff like that. They all started the conversation with Breonna Taylor and how upset they were about the verdict. And you know what? It brought me back to reality where, hey, the game I just watched, exciting, not nearly as important as what's going on, because Jimmy Butler sitting here, he doesn't look terribly happy because he's upset about what happened before the game last night.
And you have a lot of that infecting a bubble that is meant for their protection. To me, it's a fascinating time, right? When this all started, we realized, I think the audience realizes, there may be something worse down the line, but this is Vietnam for our generation, everything you're seeing right now. This is the civil rights movement and Vietnam meeting, converging in a place where you've got the virus and more civil rights movement. And if you're looking at some of the video coming out of Louisville and you're seeing police officers shot, you're seeing people who don't seem to be affiliated with any official form of law enforcement walking through the streets of Louisville armed to the teeth in a way that doesn't feel very much like America, even understanding that America loves its guns, where you've got people who look like they're there to threaten protesters in the event that you don't like the Breonna Taylor charges that weren't. If you care about people, if you care about decency, if you care about just respecting your fellow man, just try to look at this through the eyes of black people. Just stop fighting for a minute. Stop yelling at people. Stop concentrating on the disagreements and just try and look at it through the tear-filled eyes of black people who are trying to do their job on television and are breaking down because of how much it hurts, specifically, Stugat, to feel like that could be you, that in a free country, that you could walk out of your house or be sleeping in your home, and that could be you, because it's not a fear I go to bed with, ever. It's not a fear I go outside with, ever. And most of the people are listening to me right now, I've got to assume, when they walk outside or when they see a police officer, Stugatz, I'm telling you right now, when I see a police officer, there is no fear in me. None. Ever. Ever. Like, it's never happened in my life. where not even when I was being arrested, I've never had a fear of police officers because I've never had a personal reason to distrust them. But when my community is feeling that fear at every turn, when we've got people coming on our air, can you believe that you've got one of the most famous basketball players ever in the history of the women's sport, following her son on jogs in her car, her grown son in her car, because she just wants to make sure he's going to be okay and safe during this time. Like, that is not a... You have never had that fear as a parent.
Dan,
you,
I have let my children, my daughters, go outside, go out without me, without my wife, and I have never given it 2 seconds thought. Ever. Never. I've never had a conversation with them about how to act around police officers. I've never had that talk with them. I haven't had to have that talk with them. I have never feared for myself. I've never feared for my family. Not once.
Roy, how did you experience everything that was happening last night? The combination of things where your timeline is being filled with both things, just heat, joy at every turn, a real enthusiasm, an escape hatch, a lot of fun, combined with just the general heartbreak of what is happening in Louisville and how helpless you feel under the weight of injustice, of the system, of the mass incarceration system, of the whole thing. Like, you experienced all that how?
Not well. I was very despondent yesterday leading into the game, and Chris and I recorded something for Dad Pod, which is coming out later, and I told him just how angry I was because I was short with everybody at around 1:30 yesterday when this decision came down. You got to think that when Black people are talking about these things, the other side just refuses to look at the mirror. And if they are in front of the mirror, they're looking past themselves. They're looking at what's behind them. Because when you're trying to talk to people about a certain subject and they constantly deflect, it's just dispiriting. Like, you're not listening. When people are talking to you about a disproportionate amount of Black people being killed by basically a government entity, and you're coming back at that person that's trying to talk to you about what's going on in your own neighborhood, what's going on in Chicago, you're not listening. You're not listening. And it's like we're doomed to repeat history over and over in an infinite loop. It's just heartbreaking. And, you know, like I said before, you know, I have a daughter, and I'm worried about her every day and her future. I have a wife that has to go out every day to go to work. And I'm just happy to see that they come home every day, just basically that they're safe. And that's not how me or anybody like me should be living in this country. You say that we're the land of the free. It just doesn't seem that way.
That's the way a whole lot of folks feel because of the nature of what it is that it's happening in this country right now as we head into the poison of another election. Was the Miami Heat game something that offered you anything in the way of medicine? It's not far away, right? Because I feel like a whole lot of people have a low-level depression or high-level depression on them, like a film that's coding that I don't know when the people in this audience are made sad, but it's a hole in your stomach when you go to sleep at night and a hole in your stomach when you wake up. It's the first thing you think about if you can sleep when that despondence is somewhere in your system. Were you able to get a brief reprieve watching the Heat game, given that you went into it with this level of despondence?
Barely. Quarter by quarter, probably.
Yeah.
That's about it. Because I know what's going on outside of that bubble. I know what's going on in these cities. I know as soon as I found out that they were barricading everything before this announcement was going to happen.
Yeah, you knew what was going to happen. Yeah, you knew what was going to happen.
And it was going to be a lot worse going into that night. And I'm completely surprised that not a lot of buildings got.
No, this is the kind of stuff that makes cities burn, and America is it feels a little bit broken right now in that respect.
It has me terrified, not just for what's happening now, obviously, because this is something out of like a weird post-apocalyptic future. What's going on in this country right now with an airborne virus and militias in the street. And one of the things that I was always told that separated our country from others that claim to be republics or democratic entities was the peaceful transition of power. And
yeah, that was thrown like a grenade into the middle of yesterday where the president is refusing
When it almost seems like people are biding time to not just board up homes and businesses and gas stations like we've seen, because these are businesses and this is how people put food on the table. So you can kind of understand the preparation for that. But it also kind of feels like to buy time for militias to travel to Louisville, Kentucky, to very distinctly be on one side, which is the side that just always ends up winning. Statistically, it's so hard to get a conviction from the police when you see the leaked email, when you even see an attorney general who's black, by the way, which in a high pressure situation like this, that's so tense, you would think that having a black attorney general might buy you something. But then you see, forget what rallies he's spoken at in his own political career, the coded language that you keep hearing about mob mentality. And it just speaks to the deflections that people on one side of this, whether it's a racial side or a political side, keep making when people are just begging them to listen. It has me very afraid for what happens in the election, because it's almost as if any result is just going to result in all of us boarding up our homes.
It's such a simple request to be met with no. The request of, will you listen? Like, it's not that big an ask. Will you listen? And the answer is so often putting your fists up and no, I won't listen. I want to talk to you about black-on-black crime in Chicago.
And we've been talking about the peaceful transfer of power for the last 3 years and been questioning that. So it's been an ongoing discussion. And with the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, it's just another grenade thrown into fire, basically. So it's going to be a very tense, dispiriting, disheartening couple of months. And then after the election is going to be, even if there is a change in power going into January, that lame duck season is going to be one to watch, because it's going to be basically everything thrown into a meat grinder, everything just going into January.
And I know I'm going to be accused of bringing it back to sports with a Z here, but to answer your question, I am thankful for the distractions of last night. I have been avoiding cable news for the last few months, and I have found that I've been happier because of it. And last night would have been a night that I couldn't avoid it. This was network news coverage. This was what would have been something that I would have watched and digested from the time the verdict came down in the afternoon to midnight. And I'm really happy that I have that distraction. I also feel kind of guilty that I have.
Well, I was going to say your feelings on this almost aren't allowed to coexist, given that
right. It's so weird to reconcile the two.
But this one, the one I'm saying, which is you didn't want game one played for a very reasonable cause. You wanted the Miami Heat to stand against voter suppression with their arena. Yeah. But if that game had been canceled, it would have been a forfeit instead of Bam's block at the rim.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't even in that segment that I said the Miami Heat shouldn't play that game, I walked it back four minutes into that segment.
You have to laugh at the idea of that. I want racial justice, but man, that Bam block was also so cool.
But racial justice just scored 37.
Yeah, that was a bit of racial harmony with Tyler Hero.
Yeah,
yeah, to cap it off, a white guy dominated game five.
He was wearing Black Lives Matter in the back and was asked in the post game, why do you wear Black Lives Matter? And he looked at the reporter like they had two heads, and he's like, because Black Lives Matter.
I thought his answer was going to be because the black guys wouldn't let me wear Love Us.
Just
just. I got to tell you, delayed Mike is the most entertaining Mike I've ever heard.
I'm not doing that again.
No,
it was funny. It was funny though. It made it funny. I told you.
I ruined it.
I sent it. I sent Mike a note last night. The delay made it funny, except I sent it to Pat Riley by mistake.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, not even. Ryan Riley. Yeah, I guess they are close. You do it by last name, huh?
Actually, it was just the last thing that was on there. And so that's had to have happened to you, right? Where, like, you're sending someone the wrong text just because it was the last text that was on there?
I mean, it's happened to me. I told you I meant to say I got a foot massage in New York City and I meant to send to Abby, hey, this is better than sex. And by mistake, I sent it to Alden Smith. I mean, yes, it's happened to me. He hasn't responded.
Yeah, I don't like watching on delay. What the hell, man? I got cable. I got like worse than a DirecTV delay.
Well, what
upset.
Happened though? But what? Explain to me what happened. So we do this Twitch thing last night, and for those of you who didn't watch it, Mike Ryan was on delay, and it was laugh out loud funny to watch how far behind he was than the rest of us.
I was legitimately 2.5 possessions behind.
You were
2.5 possessions behind.
But what happened? Why?
What happens is this godforsaken pandemic that doesn't allow for my cable company to run wires. I paid an electrician to set up my TV setup, which, I mean, has been the culmination of my being. I've had blueprints for this thing for several years now, and I lined everything up, moved like all these electrical strips and whatnot to have cable studs run directly into these receivers. But during a pandemic, we're not allowing text to go into attics and blah, blah, blah. Blah. And so I have these wireless receivers that apparently, which by the way, I have spent a month and a half trying to figure out and get optimal performance out of, but these wireless receivers have me on a bigger delay than if I were to stream this on an actual app. It's an infuriating way to watch it, and never did it strike me more in the face than it did last night when you guys were celebrating a game that was over for a full 2.5 minutes before I could enter back into the Zoom because you would spoil the entire game for me.
It's not a DirecTV or Comcast thing that kind of they're running on, because it felt like Dan was watching Game 6.
It felt like Dan had a live feed directly into. Were you just FaceTiming with Pat Riley? How did this happen?
You were so ahead of everybody, Dan.
The reason for that is because, this is funny, you guys will find this funny, because I have had to maximize the maximum cable of maximization in the history of maximization because I live above a sports bar. And so because I'm up high, what ends up happening, or what was happening too often, is I'd hear the cheers downstairs before the stuff was happening on my television. And I'm like, no, 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 no. So I was experiencing.
You had to sync it up?
I was experiencing a modicum of what Mike Ryan was experiencing last night. Mike Ryan was way behind us. I would just hear these roars whenever something was happening in the game I was watching before I was watching it. And I'm like, I do not want to watch this game this way. I can't experience sports this way.
It's weird because you appeared to revel in your head start. As you're like, oh, Mike, check out what Tyler Hero did. And I was still reacting to something that Tyler Hero did 3 possessions earlier.
Right. For someone who's been through it, knows how annoying it is. He certainly didn't mind dishing it out last night.
Dan, your entire life is above a sports bar, huh?
That's right. Above a sports bar.
You're jealous?
Presently, I'm in one. The hotel is abandoned. We've built everything around a sports bar. That's right. What's the matter with that? You're going to make that sound.
You work above a sports bar. You live above a sports bar. It's just not a lot of people, I don't think, do that.
That's correct. It was built that way. It was all built that way for a reason. Yes, all of those things. Those are not things that happened by accident.
They just built it around you.
If you build it, Dan will come.
I was sedentary the entire time and just told people to build it, including my cable operator, because I was getting annoyed. There was an annoying noise downstairs happening before I was ready for it. I tried all the windows and making everything a little bit quieter, and then I'm like, no, I got to get this. I got to speed this all up.
In watching, and thanks to everybody that watched us on the Twitch, and we hope to do that again, hopefully, in the NBA Finals. The Heat are one win away from that. The weirdest thing for me was how legitimately excited, because we didn't have all of Amin's attention at all. Amin was a virtual fan last night, and he was so excited to be a virtual fan for someone that's on TV more than even Dan, this was so bizarre to me. He was so excited to get a shout out from Michael Biamonte, not even during the game, but just around virtual fans. He even did a celeb wave.
Can we explain this to the people? All right, so we are on the Zoom, and thank you, as Mike said, for all of you who watched. We enjoy doing that, even though Stu Gatz has spent most of the time complaining about how tired he is. If you were watching on Twitch, you would have seen the Stu Gatz library of sports books at home, which I believe was the star of last night's show. But the thing that we were doing that we want to keep doing over time is this connection that we have with the audience around sports. And I forgot what I was going to say.
You're talking about Amin and how excited he was to
Thank
get a
you.
Shout out
Thank
from
you, Billy.
Michael Bustamante, as
yes.
he called him.
He kept calling him.
Thank you. I appreciate that because I was lost in my meandering. So we're doing this thing, and Amin is in the middle of it. He's wearing a hideous jacket. He's finally cleaned up his terrible, terrible hygiene situation because the pandemic hit him very hard, and he was looking crazy in all his televised hits. And I don't know if he cleaned up for this virtual appearance that he had, but he starts telling us, hey, I'm on. They're featuring me. And we're like, where? Because we're watching the game. We're waiting to see like what they're acknowledging me, he says. And we're waiting for this to happen during the broadcast, but we're in commercial. And we're like, what are you talking about?
Some of us waiting longer than others.
That's correct. Right. I thought I was on delay because I'm like, wait a minute. Does Amin have a better connection with me? And then I'm just all of a sudden texting my guy, Jesus, oh, yeah, get over here right now. Amin's got somebody's got a better connection.
Someone's ahead of me.
Somebody's ahead of me. Get back. Get over here right now. And Amin is blowing kisses. Amin was legitimately blowing kisses. He was a parade float queen. And we're like, where are you? What are you doing? This is not on television. And he's like, I'm just with all the other virtual fans, and I'm being introduced by Michael Bustamante, the Miami Heat in-arena voice, who is not Michael Bustamante, although he should be, because Bustamante sounds more Miami than Biamonte. It was totally weird. Did you find that weird, Billy? You all found that a little weird, how excited Amin was to be just like on the equivalent of a Jumbotron.
Well, then Juju Gotti's like, oh, I mean, I'll record it for you. And it's like, are you going to send it to your parents? I mean, like, you're on TV every single day. What do you need this for? Also, we would see him in the background behind Brad Stevens a couple times. Amin was a very bad virtual fan. I don't know if he couldn't see himself. He was way too close. Half his head was cut off. Like, Amin, you got to sit back and make it seem like you're in the seat around you. You'd only see like the top of his head like this. And you just see Amin's like nose down on his face sometimes and his jacket that he was wearing. It was really strange out of him. Then he was taking shots at Josh Gad because he wanted to be the biggest person in the room, and he wasn't happy that Josh Gad was in there, and he was making arguments how he's bigger than Frozen.
I did the virtual fan thing. I got to be honest with you. It's very hard to position yourself correctly. It takes like a minute to get used to it. But there is something. I don't care how many times you've been on TV. When Michael Bustamante calls out your name in front of 20,000 Heat fans in that virtual chat room,
because he did it. It's not 20,000.
It was last night, Eastern Conference Finals. I am telling you, it is an amazing feeling. I mean, how often, when has Michael Bustamante called out your name? Never.
Never, Dan.
Thank you.
I put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Is Dan the Josh Gad of sports? I feel like physically I'm the Josh Gad of sports. I feel like Amin is sharing company. What are you two laughing at? Just
I think I'm. I hope we're laughing at it. What an odd question.
Where did that come from? This was about Amin.
I'll tell you where it came from. There was total silence, and I realized nobody else was going to say anything. I'd lost my confidence because I forgot a thought 90 seconds ago.
I called Stu Gatz Dan, which really threw everything
off. That did throw everything off.
Yelling at him might be Biamonte. Has he ever yelled your name?
It was weird. Why did you decide? Is it because we're tired?
Is my brain on a delay?
Is it because we're tired that you just looked straight at Stu Gatz and called him Dan to finish a thought leaked confidence when you did it because you petered out with Dan and your neck shrunk into your chest?
Never, Dan. Couldn't even get out the N in Dan.
And so what you just saw, audience, is the improv scramble of this show, professional and tired, where Mike Ryan bailed because he lost confidence on Dan. Stu Gatz pointed and laughed at him, and I'm like, am I the Josh Gad of sports? And then what happens? Everyone turns on me. Dan, where did that come from? You saw what happened just like I did.
You think Amin really got his haircut for the virtual fan thing?
There's no way.
I think he did, though, right? Because what was he waiting for? By the way, he passed the baton to
Solomon
to Zach Harper yesterday, huh?
I thought for sure you were going to say Solomon Hill. I'm still not over the Solomon Hill thing. So random.
I'm not over the Zach Harper thing. It was pretty jarring.
Me neither, Dad.
Billy, did you say anything to Zach Harper, or do we not have the relationship with Zach Harper, all of us, to be able to make fun of Zach Harper, how hairy he was?
I don't know. Maybe he's going through some stuff. I'm not.
I told him that the chat was saying he looked homeless, so he seemed to take it all right.
Right. You put it on the chat, though, right? I mean, how'd he play? Yeah.
Shout out to Zach Harper, though, because I mean, he was just on the Big Stewie yesterday, but we don't have much of a relationship with him. But he said yes to all the people that said no or didn't say anything at all and ghosted me. I'm gonna remember this forever.
Call them out.
Don't you be coming around during the finals?
Yeah. Harper fit in too, man. He was like, he batted like 4 for 5 on like quick one-liners, like in tight windows.
I couldn't stop talking over people, so I just stopped talking. I'm like, this is not.
Well, you were also despondent because of what was happening with the Marlins. I haven't seen you like 24 hours earlier. You were pretending to be strong, and all of a sudden, because they got their heads clubbed in by the Braves for 3 games, you're done. You announced yourself in 24 hours. You went from bravado and, hey, you're the 500 police, Dan, to now you're 500. Yeah. And guess what? Whoop, whoop. Mm-hmm. That's a poor siren by me. Do you do a good siren, Stugat?
A terrible one. No, I can't do it.
Ooh. That's even worse.
Sounds like a slide whistle.
Yeah, what was that?
Are you an owl?
No. It does sound a little.
I think it has to go like around and around, like woo, woo, woo. I mean, I can't do it, but yeah, I think it has to do something like that. Yeah, go around and around.
Let's go around. Let's go around.
Have you guys ever met police officers or seen like a police car?
That was Chris. That was Chris for the listening audience.
Oh, there you go.
Billy, do you want to try it? You want to try a siren?
Wow.
Holy.
Wow.
That is.
I'd pull over. I would.
I did pull over.
Oh, Bruce Arians. What are you doing?
Oh, there's football tonight. Jesus, will it stop?
It's not. It's Jags Dolphins.
It's not real football.
It's Jags Dolphins.
You're right about that.
So that is not the way that we are going to preview football on the show today, but we will get at some point to talking, I imagine, about Jags and Dolphins. But there have been, in the last 24 hours, a couple of things around the show that are a bit shocking. One of them, of course, it goes without saying probably, was all of us seeing Solomon Hill in the game last night. The other one is the undiscovered until last segment, Billy is extraordinary at police sirens. Billy told all of us that ours stunk, and he was absolutely right. None worse than mine. I totally choked on the proceedings. Stugatz tried but wasn't confident, which is not normal for him.
But at least I got the pattern going correctly. It's just, Dan, there's no way I could do a siren after what I experienced last night. I mean, with the throat and everything.
Okay. I thought you were emotionally distraught from everything you experienced last night. But
what happened with your throat?
Just things happened to it.
Okay, very good.
Strolls happened, you know, late nights.
Strolls happened.
Yeah, a lot of yelling, a lot of screaming, a lot of cheering for the Heat. Had the Heat -2 first quarter, -2 second quarter, won the half, won the game.
I thought they were +2.
They were a dog.
Celebrate, whatever, +2, -2, tomatoes, tomatoes, it doesn't matter.
The bets that he made didn't exactly compute.
We were all like +2 Heat, and now it's -2.
Hey, have you guys been paying? Was that your first Heat game, your first rodeo last night? They're trailing by 18 every time they play in the first quarter.
No doubt.
I do want to point out that that was one of the things that made an appearance in the Zoom chat yesterday, and I was a little alarmed by it. The number of first and second quarter bets Stugatz was making, because the action of the game itself wasn't enough. So he had to bet on individual quarters and get out of the Zoom in order to make his bets on the second quarter. I found that a bit jarring. I think, and I can't say that I've ever done this, I don't know anyone who's ever bet a second quarter. I
what do you mean
you're sitting in the studio with?
I know, but I'm saying this is what
I know. I mean, it's all about the second quarter. You got to judge the momentum of the first quarter and then bet the second quarter from there. It's in-game betting.
Oh, that is a yo-yo bet.
Yeah.
Textbook.
Second quarter. If you're betting the second quarter of a game, you are.
Means I'm having four times as much fun as you are.
Betting
textbook addiction.
Recklessly. You're betting recklessly if you're betting the second quarter of a basketball game.
Someone, there are trends on these things, all right? You ever see what J.J. Redick does in the first quarter? My God.
I am betting on the second half of the second quarter, if that makes sense. The back end of the second. Mike and I don't stop. The in-game betting experience is the greatest thing ever invented.
You've mentioned that it's crack before, but you object to the idea of it being an addiction, which is an interesting positioning.
I stopped in-game betting yesterday because I just couldn't trust what point in the game I was actually watching. I would try the in-game bet, and it was a previous commercial break.
What do you guys think? During the pandemic, Chris was famously betting the Australian ponies. When I say the idea to you, Chris, of betting the second quarter, you say what?
I mean, I've never been into the live betting. I'm with you, Dan. I've always kind of felt a little icky doing that.
Well, it's not ickiness. Honest to God, it's not. I'm not raining down judgment on the degeneracy of it.
It sounds like it.
No, I'll
explain. If you see minus -$37 on the ground, you're not going
to
pick it up?
I will explain to you why it is that I am saying what I am saying. There is a reason that I have never tried cocaine. I am afraid of what will happen the first time I try cocaine. I do not want to head down the path of betting second quarters and having more action on top of action inside of action. I'm too afraid of what that will do.
Much like cocaine, you'll love it.
Oh, it's the best. And the betting's not bad either.
We make a lot of cocaine jokes around here. An unusual amount, more than any in the history of Disney Radio.
We can agree on some men here at the Clevelander.
But does that make us? Does that make us, in the eyes of Disney and executives, the sheer number of cocaine jokes we make around here? Does it make them uncomfortable? Has anyone ever said anything to you about it?
No one listens to the Big Suey or Local.
No, but
hour.
We don't. It's not limited to the Big Suey or Local.
No, you
hour.
Know why? I think because I'm Cuban. I'll just like you can't tell me I can't embrace my culture. It's just one of those things. You can't tell Miami people not to make cocaine jokes. Like we can make those jokes.
Oh, you're saying this is ethnic and cultural pride that they would be.
I will escalate this up human resources. I'm going to be making my cocaine jokes. I'm from Miami.
That's where you draw the line.
I go to Dadeland Mall like every weekend. There was an infamous cocaine shootout there. This is just where I live, man.
A
block away from a building that housed the scene in Scarface in which some dude got his arm chainsawed off. It's just part of us. It's not going away.
It's so true, though. It really is just a block away. I mean, it's a CVS now, but every time I walk by those stairs, Valerie always laughs because I come down the stairs like that guy who died overly theatrically in the street. Like, I will do that for Valerie. I'll come down those stairs and my knees will go and I'll throw up an arm. I'm performing like the guy who was running away from Pacino down the stairs.
But a block away, when this hotel is fully operational, it's a room away.
That's right. It's not you know, and sometimes I think it's a seat away.
What?
Honestly, it's like telling someone from Kansas City they can't talk about barbecue. It's just... We're synonymous down here.
And so what other cities are associated with what? Los Angeles would be kale smoothies. What other cities have
to
something?
To me, it's the same kind of joke. It's like talking about Blatanos down here. It's just, it's Miami.
That game last night was like cocaine for you, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Why? You're talking about all the white I saw in it?
There was a lot of white in it. A lot of Tyler Hero white. What happened to Gordon Hayward, man? Wasn't he going to come back?
Hayward played all right. I mean, certainly Boston Radio seemed to agree, except for the host that called him a jag.
But he's supposed to be a savior in this series, is he not? Like, they're waiting for him to ride in on a horse that, of course, would also be white.
Played his second game, and I think he's played all right in this series. He's a different player now. After those injuries.
Right? I mean, he had 14 points. It wasn't great, but I think he was all right.
The problem is 19 turnovers. The problem is Kemba Walker has a very quiet 17 points. The problem is Jason Tatum turning the ball over, scoring 0 points in the first half, putting that team in a very difficult position. Quite frankly, it seems as though I thought entering this series, Boston had the better team. And now, yes, the results change things, but I look at the talent on the court, I'm not really sure why I thought that there was a talent disparity.
Kemba actually had 20. The guy who was dreadful last night, and this is going to happen with him because he'll give you great offensive games, but he'll typically give you this game. 3 of 12 was Marcus Smart. Like, he was just really bad.
Fouled out. But yep, that's also a credit to what Miami does on offense. If they give him a Tyler Hero assignment and Tyler Hero's going to do that, you're not going to have the same Marcus Smart that you've had offensively, who's been a revelation this season and inside that bubble. You could count on his shooting in ways where you would just leave him open.
But correct me if I'm wrong, in terms of the construction of the blueprint, when Danny Ainge is also building around a young core, I thought that the expectation of Boston fans, of Boston's architect, of the way that Boston is meant to win, oh, you want to play zone against us? Okay, Brad Stevens and Gordon Hayward know all about how to bust zones. And here comes Gordon Hayward to specifically undo this thing in a way that Marcus Smart can't, because he's got more offensive skills than Marcus Smart does. I thought that's what the expectation was. You're building around a Gordon Hayward, injured or not, and I thought that that was what he was going to bring in terms of heroism.
And for a team like Boston that made it to Game 7 against a younger LeBron with Kyrie injured, with Gordon Hayward injured, someone saying, oh, they don't have Gordon Hayward, that's not supposed to swing this series. Miami Heat are giving the Boston Celtics suffering that they already kind of experienced several years in the playoffs. It's hard to picture that because Jason Tatum still is so young, but he's done a fair bit of suffering early on in his career. This one is puzzling. The leap that Miami has made in that four-month suspension of play before they started getting back in the gyms and working out together, they made a year-over-year leap inside of 4 months, and we're all having a real problem sort of coming to grips with that, I think.
It's amazing that two guys that won you the biggest game of your season last night, a 20-year-old and a guy who's in his second season in BAM, that those two guys...
Not in his second season, I don't think.
Is BAM in his third?
I think it's third.
Yeah.
Okay, but those two guys combined went 21 of 32 from the field. Think about that.
Well, you say
those two guys, because Butler and Dragic were not great shooting last night.
You say that that's amazing, but you have also said, because Jason Tatum is so young, that what you expect is Kevin Durant. And what I saw in that first half last night was shocking from Tatum. A first half where that's the worst half that Boston has had offensively in the bubble. It's the worst playoff half that Tatum has ever had. And he did adjust, and he was great.
And he hit 28 in the
second
half.
No, he was great in the second half. Yeah. But that first half was shocking to see him not do anything, to just be quiet. Like, just, it's not what anybody can miss six shots, but it's just that he was taking just six shots, and none of them looked like they were going to go in. And that, you just can't have that from, that's your stars. That's like, first of all, let's examine this part, right? We made a big deal about the locker room commotion, as we always do, even though it was stupid. But what Marcus Smart was doing, Marcus Smart knows, I believe, with a decent amount of self-awareness, that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are better than he is, that he needs them to play the way he does in terms of effort and aggression, because they're just better than he is at basketball. And so the argument of the commotion was about Jaylen Brown. But when you're down 2-1 and it feels a little bit like your young core is being tested on its toughness, and that's what Jason Tatum comes out of the locker room with in the first half when you need him. Like, if I'm Marcus Smart, never mind that I'm going 3-for-12 and fouling out, I'm looking at the guys that I expect to carry me, and I'm like, hey, dudes, like, come on. Like, when are you guys going to play like hero? Like, hey, Tatum,
Stugatz is saying you're Kevin Durant. How about you give us 37 a game in this series?
Right, that's a game. You're right, Dan. I mean, listen, it's hard to argue against it. It's a game that if you think Jason Tatum's going to be the next Kevin Durant, and I do, that he has to come out and give you something better than 0 points in the Eastern Conference Finals game four. I mean, he just has, or game five, excuse me. He just has to, but in the second half, he was remarkable.
But they're bewildered. They're bewildered in listening to Boston Sports Talk Radio. And we, yes, sometimes locker room fights are overblown in the media. But in listening to sports radio in Boston, they talk to Gary Washburn, who's covered that team for a long time. And keep in mind some of the battles that Doc Rivers and Rajon Rondo had. Washburn said, I flatly have never heard anything like this coming out of a locker room. It was scary. They're losing to a 20-year-old. In ways that we've never seen a 20-year-old perform in the playoffs. And they're losing to Goran Dragic, who has gray hair. They don't understand it. This was a team that took LeBron to the brink. Prime LeBron. And now a 20-year-old is going at our best perimeter defender? They are so confused by this, and so am I, quite frankly.
This is going to be a fun show for us to do today because we are now a couple hours into what it is that we're doing. We're all very tired, and we get to end a second segment with Stugatz being bad at math. That was game four last night, Stugatz.
I corrected myself.
You made it game five. You said game four initially, and then you corrected it to game five.
I have no idea where I am.